So, welcome today to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Lawrence Buchanan. Hello, Lawrence.
Hi, Adrian.
First of all, Lawrence, before we kick off, tell us a bit about you and what you do in your role, etc.
So I head up CRM and social CRM for Capgemini in the UK. I work across all of our different industry sectors and also all of our different technology providers. I take a completely agnostic view of the technology providers that we work with. I'm passionate about two things, really. Firstly, customer centricity and really thinking outside in from the customer's perspective and not simply paying lip service to terms like the customer is king. And the second is disruptive technologies and how they impact the customer's experience and how organizations can firstly take advantage of some of the opportunities presented, but also mitigate some of the threats that they present.
That's fantastic. Now, you mentioned there that you head up Capgemini's practice in the UK around CRM and social CRM, and that seems to be particularly high on the agenda right now. Why do you think that is, and what's changing around us to drive that?
Yeah, look, I think social CRM is a really hot topic at the moment. Partly fueled by hype, partly fueled by the hype around, you know, social media at the moment. But, you know, if you look back at the last 3-5 years, the thing that is really clear is that we've been through a huge amount of change within the world of communications and connectivity. So you think about the widespread adoption of broadband and mobile broadband, the explosion of hardware devices that have grown up to tap into that connectivity. The iPad was only launched, you know, close to a year ago, a little over. The iPhone almost created a new channel in itself. Add to that social networking, and suddenly these communication engines combined, I think, have quite drastically altered the customer interaction model that most organizations have. It's put a huge amount of power into the hands of consumers. They have never had this degree of connectivity, this access to information. And that, for most organizations, can be quite daunting, really, because it challenges how quickly they can catch up with their consumers, how quickly they can engage with consumers on their terms, how ready they are to accept this handing over of control to consumers. And most organizations that we talk to are really trying to get their heads around this topic now, which I think is one of the drivers, really, for social CRM.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that I wrote something earlier today that I posted up on the blog. It was based on a piece of research from one of your competitors. I'm sort of loath to say, but it was from IBM, and they were looking at. They did a piece of research which looked at the differences in perceptions about why customers want to engage in sort of social media, and it seemed to me there's a gap that companies are struggling with, and that gap is very much around, you know, businesses are wanting to reach out to their customers to give them more information, try and build community, do all those different things, but the customers are looking at it from a very, very different perspective in large amount. Is there just a different mindset, and businesses are just catching up? Is that the big thing?
Look, I've read the piece of research that you're referring to. I think it's excellent. I think it's a really interesting document, actually. The thing that comes out at me for that is that most businesses, when they're dipping their toes in the water of social media, when they're starting out for the first time, I'm talking really large organizations rather than startups starting from scratch with a whole new mindset. Most large organizations that are entering this space tend to bring the same mindset to these new disruptive technologies. So they view social media, for example, in their first step through a marketing-centric lens, and they typically apply their old models of outbound blast marketing. So they open a Facebook account, a Twitter account, a YouTube account, and they blast out their traditional marketing material on those accounts. Now, we know perfectly well that that can be a recipe for disaster. That can go horribly wrong. Consumers will interact where they want, and consumers, when they interact with organizations, will do so in a two-way process. That blast out model on social media is a pretty dangerous one, I think. So I think to really make the step, the most crucial part for me is the mindset change. And it's the mindset change from thinking what I call inside out. In other words, the organization defines the product, how it wants to take the product to market, who it wants to take the product to market to. The organization tries to control everything, even the point at which customers buy. We want customers to buy when it suits us, on the channel of our choice, at the time of our choice. We want customers to use service channels that are most convenient for us because they're cheaper for us. That mindset shift outside in is incredibly difficult, but to me it's the most fundamental part of this social CRM topic. And it's actually thinking outside in from the customer's perspective. What are the jobs that customers are trying to do? What are the value creation processes that customers are following? And how can we enable customers to create value in a better way? And when we start to meet those consumer needs in a way that drives mutually beneficial relationships for customer and for organization, that's when I think we can really start to get value out of this topic.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, going back to what you said, there's a difference between how, say, startups or smaller businesses approach it and how large corporates approach it. Is the fundamental difference then just mindset and how they approach things?
I think to some extent that the startups have it quite easy in this space. If you look at where the majority of the really successful examples in what we would call social CRM at the moment are people like GiftGaff, the telco startup owned by Telefonica Group,
yeah,
Threadless.com. And most companies start up with a mentality of outside in from day one, and they engineer their entire business on that principle. So GiftGaff, as a telco SIM-only provider, started with a community forum before they had a product. So they engaged potential consumers. They asked them what they liked and disliked about mobile phone tariffs. They designed their product and service offering with the customer at the heart from the very outset. Now, having started from that platform, they extended that through to marketing, sales, service. So within service, for example, customers answer each other's problems on the community forum, but the majority of their service is peer-to-peer. And peer-to-peer service for them has an average response time 24/7 of under 3 minutes. So the positive participation of customers in what is inherently quite a negative industry, the telco industry, is incredible at the moment. But I think, you know, if you're contrasting startups with the larger organisations, clearly startups like GiftGaff don't have the legacy, if you want, the legacy of existing channels, the legacy of existing departments who behave in a siloed way, who are incentivized in many cases to behave in a siloed way, the legacy of ingrained customer behavior that have in our customer base that will only use the contact center, for example. So that's a behavior of, within product management of a command and control mindset that we will control what product we take to market and when. Now, when you're applying that shift to a large organization, this is transformational now, and the set of challenges around it are very, very different to a startup.
And that's fascinating. You talked about legacy systems and processes and silo mentality and incentive structures and control, etc. I mean, that sounds like it's a huge challenge for organizations, for large organizations, to make this change, this fundamental change. I mean, it's almost sounds like, in a way, it's going to take some really brave organizations to almost blow themselves up and remake themselves if they want to compete, sustain themselves, and lead their markets going forward. Would you agree with that?
Yes, in part. I think the GIFGAF model has showed that it's possible for a small startup to be incredibly disruptive within an industry. Now, the pressure for most organizations is to think, how can they react to this constantly changing world of technology simply to keep up with where their consumers are? How can they take advantage of those changes quicker than their competitors, learn about their consumers quicker than their competitors, apply that into action quicker than their competitors? And I agree that the scale of that change can be enormous. Now, the thing I would say to caveat that, though, straight away, is that, you know, having gone through 13 years of working in the CRM market, I remember very well the sort of boom and bust of CRM. And where CRM went badly wrong was we spoke about this monumental change, and the way we delivered it was...
Lawrence, you were saying before we got cut off about the massive transformation that companies will have to kind of go through, and you're adding about a bit of a caveat.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, on one hand, the scale of transformation that most organizations will need to go through to take advantage of some of these huge changes in technology, I think that scale can be enormous. But on the other hand, if you look back at, you know, the boom and bust of CRM, one thing that was really clear is that the way the early CRM projects approached this change was one of big bang. You know, I remember CRM programs that would define a vision that was an end state 3 to 5 years down the line, and they would work to deliver that end state with a huge, monolithic, cumbersome program. We all know what happened to those. You know, the wind came out of their sails, management lost space, expectations changed, people couldn't remember why they were doing the program in the first place. By the time you implemented the technology, it was out of date. That's not the way we deliver customer-facing programs these days, or in fact any major IT programs. To me, the thing that's changed now is that we're able to deliver in a far more agile way. And things like cloud computing, software as a service have greatly helped that, because they make it so much easier and faster to consume the business capabilities we want as a service, to pay for what we use, to scale them up and down as the business demands it. So that makes it far more easier to take in effect a sort of portfolio approach, where we're prepared to back a number of different initiatives, recognizing that some we will test and they won't come to anything. Some will really fly and we can continue to back those. So I think the way of delivering change has in fact changed quite radically in the last few years.
There's sort of two things that occur to me when you were talking then. One of the first ones is that, you know, you talk about the change and creating that change and creating a movement towards more customer centricity. First question I have is, where does that start? I mean, is that always going to start at the board level, CEO's office, or are you also seeing evidence of it starting in individual departments and through in individual sort of functions, that they're just going off and innovating in themselves because they're faced with sort of new challenges?
I've seen it start in all sorts of different places, actually. Fundamentally, I suppose it starts with the customer. It starts with customers interacting in a completely different way. Mm. It starts with customers going to price comparison sites. It starts with customers talking to each other in consumer forums, venting their anger and complaints on social networking sites. It starts with customers who are pulling and changing that customer interaction model. Within the organization, then, I've seen the response to that change come from lots of different places. You know, top down, the forward-thinking CEO who really wants to get on top of this, and understand what it means to his or her business, how they can take advantage of these changes, versus, you know, at a departmental level, without question, I think software as a service has created almost a sort of rogue IT department, where individual managers, fed up, frustrated with the slowness at which their own technology organizations can respond to their business needs, are simply going out and contracting directly to these service providers to get the capabilities they want to be able to respond to the consumer. I think the one constant for me is that to really make change stick, it has to flow top to bottom. It has to have executive buy-in, but then clearly the people that have the biggest impact on the consumer are the people that are interacting with the consumer.
And that brings me to my second point. Is it, you talk about technology, technology changing, and from and lessons learned from the last sort of big wave of CRM, and it was people were implementing big systems, and by the time that was all finished, you know, they were out of date. But they're just moving to more of an agile model, use of cloud computing resources and software as a service, etc. It seems to me the one thing that stays constant in all of that is, if you like, the culture of the organization and the employees and the level of engagement the employees have with the organization to go on that journey. Is that something that's also rising up the agenda as well?
Yeah, no question at all. It's employees that you know, at ground level, make the difference to the customer. And that's as simple as the way people are incentivized, silos within the organization, the way in which that they collaborate, the culture of the organization. But, you know, if we talk about customer centricity, but then we talk about building long-term customer relationships, which CRM has always been about. Social CRM doesn't change that in any way. You know, that's easily broken by, for example, incentivizing our salespeople to close a deal before the end of the quarter because it suits us, because it helps us meet our revenue targets, even if it's not necessarily in the best interest of the customer long term. You know, that manifests itself in call center agents measured on average call handle time, who hang up on every fifth customer just to improve their stats. These behaviors have a much greater impact on the consumer than any technology, I think.
And you mentioned something about hitting revenue targets. I mean, that means that there is a CEOs have a bit of a dichotomy in front of them, because particularly if they're publicly quoted companies, when you know you're reporting to the market and the market's always looking for revenue targets on a quarterly basis or an annual basis. But then you've got the way the market is going, and it's sometimes possibly a little bit slower, a bit more organic, and that's a real sort of dilemma, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. People at every level behave how they're measured, but you know, long term, if the CEO's job is to provide value to the shareholders, I think we've got to start thinking about the customer base as an asset, in the same way that we'll be thinking about a factory as an asset.
Yeah.
And we need to invest in that asset, we need to maintain that asset, we need to grow that asset. And over time, I suspect that will deliver much greater value to shareholders than, you know, taking such a short-term mentality to customers that we don't care if they buy something today and fail to pay their bills tomorrow, because we've made our numbers this quarter.
And apart from some of the companies that you've mentioned, say that they're doing very disruptive things, say like GIFGAF, and Threadless, for example, who have you seen, say in the UK, that you think are taking a much, much longer view of the relationship and market sort of trends to start to build their organisation sort of for the future, as it were?
It's a very difficult question. I think you see across most industries, you can see some organizations that are thinking that way. So you see a lot of the marketing messages coming out in financial services, for example, on the TV adverts are around rewarding customers who are there for the long term rather than giving special offers just for new customers. That's quite a common theme at the moment in financial services advertising. You look at organizations like Sky, for example, who for the last few years under Jeremy Darroch as CEO have had this huge target and public target to get 10 million customers by 2010. But now their focus is shifting and they're telling the city, okay, we've got that target of 10 million customers now. What do we do with them? How do we ensure that we build longer term relationships with each customer? We expand our share of wallet with each customer. So you see that their focus is changing actually from one around pure customer acquisition to one now around improving retention, improving share of wallet, improving using service as a differentiator.
Given it was a difficult question, that sort of implies to me that actually, we're at the beginning of a massive change and a huge wave that's going to sweep across many, many industries. Would you agree with that? And therefore, the change is not necessarily now. We've only just almost like dipped our toe in the water, but actually, it's the next few years where things are going to shift radically for companies.
Yeah, I think if you look back at the last few years, the one thing that's constant, and take the last few years and those changes I described earlier, the explosion of hardware devices, the huge growth of social networking sites, and in fact the rise and fall of some social networking sites. We barely speak of MySpace, Second Life these days. Everything is Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, sure.
If you look back at that time, the one constant for me is constant change. And that's a trend for me that is absolutely going to continue. And the challenge for most organizations is quite simply, we don't know what the next major disruptive hardware device that Apple or someone else will launch. We don't know what the next big social network will be that's being dreamed up in a college dorm room in Silicon Valley, in Towsley, and in London. What we do know is that those things will happen.
Yes,
and that the organizations that are agile enough to take advantage of that change, to move where their consumers are, to learn about their consumers, to apply that learning into real action, are the ones that are going to succeed in this marketplace. There's a sort of common cliche really in business circles around you know, skating to where the puck is going to be.
You were saying before we got cut off, but the Wayne Gretzky saying, got to skate to where the puck is. And that's one of the big challenges, isn't that actually nobody really knows where the puck's going to go because there's so much change. Change is so constant. How do companies deal with that?
No, exactly right. I think rather than spending all your time trying to predict where the puck is going to be, and there's some value in that, don't get me wrong, I think really focusing on how do we ensure our agility is there so that we can take advantage of these changes, whatever they might be. And to me, that, you know, it comes down to the classic people, process, technology, doesn't it? It comes down to how can we ensure that from an organizational perspective, we break down these internal silos, we get the right people talking, we empower them to act fast. How can we ensure from a technology and process perspective that our information architecture supports constant change, that our IT environment supports the ability to, for example, consume services as we need them, scale them up and down as we need them, switch them on and off as we need them, rather than in the old mold around saying, you know, we've spotted a change, we need to make it. 6 months down the line, IT suddenly, you know, IT finally delivers on that promise. You know, it permeates the entire organization, really.
And I think therefore that must be that sort of advice would apply to pretty much every business. Really, it's almost like the majority of your focus should be on serving your current customers well, and also then staying agile. Is that right?
Yeah, I agree. You know, this last 3 to 5 years has just shown change is so fast now. It really is. You think how many people around you now have an iPad It's gone into every aspect of the consumer world, of the business world as well. I can't seem to turn up to a meeting now without someone putting an iPad on a table. Yeah, that's a hardware device that was only launched, you know, a little over a year ago.
I do think that we are I think it's exciting times. I mean, tremendously exciting times, because we don't know what's going to happen. But I think what's also really exciting from my perspective is that, you know, business is becoming more human, and in its customer centricity, it's becoming more human. And I think that's it's a fantastic opportunity, both inside organizations and also outside of organizations as customers, to really sort of drive innovation, enrich conversations, build co-creative projects, all of that sort of really good and interesting new sort of stuff. So I believe that we're living in really exciting times.
Absolutely, yeah, I couldn't agree more.
And now it makes me think, I have no idea what I'm going to buy for my brother for Christmas in the next kind of couple of years, because you just never know what's going to be around the corner.
Yeah, absolutely. You know that whatever you do buy will probably be out of date in 6 months.
Absolutely. Obviously, we're going to err back to the time of your favourite uncle, when all they do is they end up just giving you a check and then saying, go and treat yourself.
Yes, exactly. But you know, on that, I think to some extent, a lot of people today are shifting their mentality from buying to renting. You know,
yeah.
You see people buying computer games and then passing them on to the next person really, really quickly.
Yes.
In effect, they're renting it. You see people using services like Zipcar, for example, in the US,
yeah,
where they're giving up the idea of buying a car and owning it for 5 years and watching it depreciate over time to paying for something as and when they need it.
Absolutely. And, you know, and looking at things from different delivery models. I mean, look at how, say, Love Film reinvented the DVD rental market and completely, you know, took Blockbuster out. And that happened over the space of what, 3, 4, 5 years? It's incredible.
Well, it did. It's a really interesting story. You know, you look at Netflix and you think for a couple of years they were really the darling of the stock market, weren't they? And seen as responsible for the downfall of Blockbuster Video. You track the two share prices of the two firms, and it's such a clear moment around 2 years ago when Blockbuster tanked and Netflix just soared. But you know, as little as what, 6 to 8 weeks ago now, Facebook announced that they were getting into the movies on demand video business. Facebook announced the partnership, I think, with Warner Brothers, but I could be wrong. And they started to release, for example, the new Batman movie through Facebook that users could buy with Facebook credits.
Right.
This currency that Facebook have created out of nothing in the last, you know, six, nine months, that suddenly they expect will do 2 billion in transactions on the Facebook platform this year. So the impact of that on Blockbuster was they saw a pretty significant drop in their share price the morning that Facebook announced that they were getting into that space. That's not, of course, to say that Netflix will go the same way as Blockbuster, because they are already making moves to change their business. I think that they've already got into some content production for the first time now.
Right.
So they really have their finger on the pulse of what's happening. They are agile enough to look at what Facebook are doing, understand the threat, and respond. I think they're a great example of everything we're talking about on this call.
Fantastic. Well, here's looking forward to the next few years. I mean, Lawrence, that's been fascinating, and I think it'd probably be quite wise to wrap up on that note before we get cut off again. But before I go, one of the things I always like to do to wrap up these calls is I always ask everybody that I speak to, is there anything that you'd like to shamelessly plug?
Yeah, good question. Oh, the thing that's a pretty hot topic for us at the moment is I guess around social CRM. We launched a proposition at the end of last year called Social Insight into Action. And that proposition aims to help organizations cut through these vast amounts of unstructured data that consumers are creating every day on the social web, and do that with a much greater degree of accuracy and automation than we're seeing from traditional social media monitoring. Once we've got some insights from that unstructured data, our aim is to combine it with structured business information, web analytics, call center analytics, customer analytics, for example, and then help the organization embed the change it needs to make. So changing a business process, changing the flow of content on a website, for example. So that proposition is called Social Insight into Action, which is something that we are pushing pretty strongly at the moment and seeing a lot of interest in.
That's fantastic. I'd love to know more about that. So if you've got any information to hand, then I'd love to take a look at more information on that. It looks like something worth talking about and learning more about.
I'll send you over a link.
Fantastic. Lawrence, thank you for your time today. That's really interesting and exciting and insightful. And that's great. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thanks for your time.